Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm joined by my co-host Kartik Krishnayar. This week we're going to do something fun. This is going to be very different for us. Also, it's also a little bit of Back to the Future. The Premier League is back, as we all know, and we want to dive into that. So we will still talk about the soccer media business in terms of any news or any questions from you, the listeners. But we also want to get to the heart of the game, which is what we're going to be moving towards more and more, as well as this week, too. We're going to have some preview podcasts previewing the new seasons of La Liga and Serie A with some top commentators. So hang tight for that. That'll be out this week. So Kartik, EPL review show. This is kind of a flashback. Let's start off, actually, let's ask you a question first. This is a question I thought about, and listeners, you can play along with this too. If we were to jump in a plane right now, Kartik, and fly to Europe to watch a game at a specific stadium, what would it be? I mean, what stadium would you want to go to watch whatever team it may be in Europe if you could jump on a plane and go right now?
I think it might be Nottingham Forest for that first home match, which you're going to have back in the Prem next Sunday against West Ham.
Nice. Yeah, it's City Grounds. That's going to be really interesting to watch. Just as we got excited a couple of years ago when Leeds United got into the Premier League, that one would be a fantastic trip. For me, I had more time to think about this because I had the question in mind. I'm kind of torn between, I want to go to the new White Hart Lane. I've been to the old White Hart Lane, but the new one, I want to go there just to see what that experience is like, because on TV it's hard to take it in because the stands, the stadium is so large. I want to be inside there to see what it feels like, but also I want to go back to Goodison. And I want to go back to Goodison and say my goodbyes to it before they move to the Bramley Moor Dock Stadium right by the River Mersey. And Goodison's a ground that's near and dear to my heart, as is Craven Cottage, as is many other grounds around England. But I'm also really excited about going to see the new White Hart Lane and to see the new Tottenham Hotspur. Kartik, maybe we'll start there. Like, what was your thoughts about that match? At first, it looked like Southampton might cause a shock result in this one.
Yeah, Southampton has a very, very young team. Hasenhüttl has also changed the setup this season. They're going effectively with what we would think of as a 3-5-2 with a very young player in Lavia, who they bought from Manchester City, 18-year-old phenom, kind of sitting in the middle of the pitch, and he had a pretty good game. So I think also they didn't have Che Adams for this match. Livermento they didn't have. So I think you're looking at a team that is going to put up some bad performances. And this is a side that's lost 9-0, right, a couple times in the last few seasons and stayed up each of those seasons. Exceedingly young team, but Spurs were clinical. Spurs were very good. Chris, I tipped it. I you know, sometimes I'm dead wrong, but Friday night I had a fit of inspiration and tweeted around 8 p.m. Eastern time. I think Ryan Sessegnon, who has been a disappointment, right? He was hyped at 16 and 17, right? Years old. He's going to have a breakout year, in my opinion, because of Antonio Conte working with him. He's going to come good now at the age of 22. The next day, next morning, he scores a goal, or next afternoon, UK time, scores a goal and then has another one disallowed for a fractional offside. So sometimes I get it right on Twitter.
Yeah, I think for Southampton, it's one of those things that they're not expected to win against the Tottenham Hotspurs of the world, but the matches that will decide their fate, if they do stay up this season or not, or if they finish mid-table, are going to be those games against, I mean, Fulham, Forest, Bournemouth, Brighton, etc., etc. Those clubs that are going to be, those matches that we may not pay as much attention to because there might be another big match happening or bigger match happening at the same time. But those are the games where they need to get those 3 points or get a draw and kind of claw their way through the season.
And another thing about this match I want to say is that this shows what bringing summer reinforcements will do for the guys who are already at the club. So Richarlison comes in, the obvious player he would replace once he's out, once he's not, no longer suspended is Kulusevski, right? Bissouma comes in, the obvious player he would replace is Bentancur. Perisic comes in, the obvious player he would replace is Sessegnon. All three of those guys had probably 8 out of 10s, if not 9 out of 10s yesterday. So it shows Antonio Conte also knows what he's doing. Bringing in summer signings will put pressure on your current squad to perform even better.
Yeah, that doesn't always happen, though, at some clubs, though, Kartik. I mean, Manchester United, I'm sure, are going to be talked about on every single podcast this week, and there's going to be the in-depth analysis about this side. But my thoughts about that game were that I thought that, yet again, NBC Sports didn't really kind of dive deep into the Brighton story. And actually, it was funny, too, because I think it was either halftime or post-match, Rebecca Lowe cued it to Tim Howard and said, hey, what about that Brighton performance? And Tim Howard started talking about Manchester United and all the problems with Manchester United. Obviously, Tim Howard, a former Manchester United player. But I think in many ways that Brighton, to me, one of the success stories of the weekend. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Graham Potter did something really interesting tactically, and we know how good he is, right? He's one of the geniuses in English football now, and he put in Trossard and Solly Marsh, two guys you would not expect to see in wing back positions. In fact, when I got the lineup this morning before the match, I thought this is wrong, right? These guys are in the wrong position. Gosh, you know, the app I'm using doesn't even know Brighton very well. How could they put these guys on there? And Lallana was playing in kind of this sort of withdrawn central midfield role. It looked really weird. Well, it was a specific tactic to negate Manchester United's inability to play quick passes from central midfield, from McTominay and Fred specifically, and the fact that they weren't playing with a striker. So you could put the fullbacks, Trossard and March, both of whom are guys who can score goals, and we saw it, obviously. We've seen it in the past. Push them up, and then you also have Lallana kind of sitting on top of Fred. Lallana is one of the smartest, most technical English players, in my opinion, of the last 10 years. It's injuries that have done him in. Really kind of dictating how Fred moves the ball. So Fred's not able to move the ball normally, which means Eriksen has to drop deeper, and then the whole United attack is disrupted at that point. Now, when Ronaldo came in, things kind of changed, but Potter got it absolutely right. There should have been a penalty also, so there should have been 3 goals to the good at that point. And Chris, once again, you and I both say to one another privately, Brighton is as good to watch as any team in Europe. And that's kind of the pity of NBC. Give Rebecca Lowe credit. She tried to push that, but Howard, as you said, didn't answer it. They have one of the most entertaining, interesting sides for me on the planet right now, and they're not taking advantage of it. And same thing can be said for Sky. Sky's not promoting Brighton, but what a job Graham Potter's doing.
Yeah, and we talked about that last season quite a bit too, in terms of Brighton and just what an incredible job was happening at that club in terms of the way the team was playing, just the process. And it was a club that flew under the radar quite a bit. You mean they'd win at Old Trafford, or they'd get a shock result or a shock tie, and then there'd be minimal credit, and then the tide changed, the news cycle changes to Manchester United or Chelsea or whoever it may be. It's interesting too that you mentioned that too, Kartik, in terms of the focus on Brighton. And I don't know. I don't want to beat up too much on NBC Sports. It is the first weekend of a new season. I think they're a little bit rough. It's going to take some time to get going. But there was an interview last week with one of their executives that was in Sports Business Journal. And he was talking about how great NBC Sports are doing and with this renewal and how excited they are. But he did have one quote that did stand out to me. And he says, we focus on all 20 clubs. We don't just focus on the big six. In order to be true to the league, you have to give all 20 teams attention and coverage. What's your thoughts on that, Kartik?
Well, I completely agree with that. I think that would be great if that were what they were doing. Yeah, they mentioned all 20 teams, but again, I don't think there was enough, even pregame yesterday morning, there was not enough conversation about Fulham. Now, granted, I think a lot of you who listen to this know I watch the championship pretty closely. I'm on Talk Sport twice a week talking about the championship. So, yes, I saw a lot of Fulham last season, a lot more than Robbie Musto or Tim Howard had seen. So, in fairness, that I have to concede that. But there seemed to be some genuine shock at halftime of that match of how Fulham was playing. That's exactly how they played last season. So it wasn't like Potter sprung a surprise tactically. That's different, right? And obviously the pundits have seen Brighton. They've been in the Premier League now for 5 years. This is Graham Potter's fourth season. But Fulham, that's exactly how they played last season. In that first half. Now, obviously, Liverpool didn't play the way we expected. But, yeah, so I think that there are only storylines when managers get sacked at those clubs or there's some sort of transfer speculation, right? So I think NBC needs to do better because those clubs are picking up fans as time goes on with the Premier League, and that's partly a credit to NBC, right? It's because NBC's done such a good job showcasing the league in the United States. Those clubs are picking up fans here in the States, but it's still, the coverage is really disproportionate. And even today, Man City, West Ham. West Ham has been the last two seasons. Well, actually, Leicester was a couple of seasons ago, but has been among the two best clubs the last few years outside of the top six, right? Outside of that big six. And really no discussion of what was wrong with West Ham today. And there were a lot of things that were different about West Ham and their execution today, but they didn't talk about it very much.
I think part of this, though, too, and this evolves, I mean, this kind of fits in with our discussion of soccer and the heart of the game and what we see on the pitch. But oftentimes what we see on the pitch is through the lens of whether it's the commentators or the analysts or the studio presenters or what we read or what we listen to, if it's listening to you, Kartik, and your thoughts. And I think in many ways, too, that what NBC Sports is doing is doing a really kind of rose-tinted glasses view of the Premier League. Even Sunday morning, too, when they had David Ornstein on to talk about the Premier League insider, to talk about topics, it was about talking about how great Arsenal is and what a great start of the season, what a wonderful transfer window they've had, and then talking about Manchester City and signing Erling Haaland, and would City be buying some more players in this transfer window. So it is very positive, it is very rosy, it is very energetic, and it is very much not getting to the grit, like kind of really kind of what's happening. And I think in a way, though, too, Kartik, I mean, because they are now, they've got six more years of this, I don't see it changing much. I think it's still going to be, hey, this put this in a positive light. And we don't want it to be in a negative light. We just want it to be a little bit more fair and balanced and better.
And broader.
And broader, yeah. And that goes back to that quote that from the NBC sports executive. In theory, that makes total sense. And that's what they said in 2013 when they first launched with the Premier League, is that they were going to do a deep dive into all the teams. And they did at that time. I think they did a much better job, more of an effort then. Now it's more about talking about the big teams, about the Manchester Uniteds, the Christian Pulisics, so on and so forth. It's really kind of the big four, the big six. And they talk about the others, but they pretty much have to, because those big teams are playing those other 14.
Yeah, and like this morning with Ornstein, I felt like, okay, Bournemouth is making some moves this week. Now I have to concede I'm in a more educated position. I guess that would be the term that I was 6 months ago or a year ago. I've renewed some of my old contacts when I used to report and break stories in the UK. So I have more of a sense of what's going on in the transfer market this go around, Chris, than I have maybe for the last five, six, 7 years since I stopped reporting on that stuff. And Everton is making some moves. They've got a couple guys. They probably will bring in the next few days, from what I'm gathering. Bournemouth have a few that they're going to bring in the next few days, and several other clubs too. There's a lot going on with Leicester. So again, I like having Ornstein, and he's reporting on the whole league for The Athletic, but the focus on NBC seems to be what's City doing, what's United doing, what's Arsenal doing, how about Chelsea, right? Not the other 14 teams.
Yeah, and it was also on the same morning too, where there were protests outside Old Trafford, and that would have been something that the previous Premier League insider reporter probably would have had his maybe more insight or more discussion about those types of things. And Ornstein didn't even mention it, but NBC Sports did mention it later. Speaking of Manchester United, Kartik, my thoughts on this one too is that, which is sad news and bad news for Man United supporters, but I'm envisioning that this is going to be a long decline. It's going to take a long time to go ahead and do a complete upheaval on the squad in terms of taking the players out, coming up with a process and a system to play, bringing new players in, improving the youth academy, etc. And this could be over a decade before we see Manchester United winning a title trophy. I think they're that far behind Liverpool and Man City, and at risk right now in terms of even Tottenham and Arsenal going above them.
Oh, Arsenal's way ahead of them. Arsenal has done the rebuild right. So Man United is where Arsenal was when Wenger left, basically. Or maybe a year before Wenger left. So how many years has that been now? Like 5 years? So they're 5 years behind Arsenal.
So what about some of these other matches from this past weekend? Leeds United, and Kartik, you watched all of the games. We went through afterwards, even for the games you missed live, you went back and watched them all. What about Leeds United? I didn't get a chance to watch that one as closely. I saw the goals, but what was your take in terms of that match? Because it sounded like it was a really, really fast-paced, energetic match.
Yeah, and a lot of mistakes at the back for Wolves. I'm concerned about Wolves because they're once again not very deep. They seem ready to let Connor Cody go to Everton, and they didn't use substitutes wisely. So I think the way this match changed was not only pressure on the back four of Wolves from Leeds and the high pressing that Jesse Marsh is known for, but Marsh's substitutions, which brought Clich and Greenwood on, right? And takes Rodrigo off, who scored the goal, but adds a different element there in that midfield with Clich. And Mark Rocco, who I thought had a good debut, obviously a player Marsh is familiar with from Germany, having played against him, he had a good impact, but then that kind of changed the midfield. So I liked what Marsh did. It was a great debut for two American players, Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson. Aaronson in particular had an impact in that goal, right? The winning goal, the own goal by Alt Nuri. But good start for Leeds. I still am concerned about Leeds long term. Still concerned about Wolves, but Leeds looking at one or two more guys apparently maybe to come in this week. So Chris, this is going to be crazy because the transfer window is open for another 20 something days, and maybe again it's because I've renewed some old contacts. I'm hearing the sort of things that makes me think that there's going to be huge squad upheaval before we get to match days five or six for some of these squads. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I actually, for me, I hate it because I want you know, when the season starts, I want the teams kind of in place so that I can look at them and analyze them as they go through, rather than having a team that could have, I mean, four or five new players a few weeks into the season. It's it makes it harder to analyze. I mean, it should be exciting transfer window, but yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of activity, of course, at the last minute too. I think a lot of players being offloaded. So looking at some of these games from this past weekend, Kartik, was there any team performance that stood out for you that we haven't mentioned yet that you feel that should be mentioned?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think Fulham's performance at the Cottage really stood out for me. Speaking of Americans, Anthony Robinson really gave Trent Alexander-Arnold all he could handle. Good omen for the U.S. Heading into a World Cup. And Timmy Ream, a player I love, a player I still believe should be in the U.S. team for the leadership he brings. He is wearing the armband for Fulham, even if he's not being called into the U.S. team. He is Fulham's captain, and he had a tremendous match. And I think Fulham, as a team performance, was really good. I have told people all summer long, and admittedly, I could have been dead wrong, and I still could be dead wrong. I've told people all summer long, do not look at Mitrovic's stats the last two times Fulham came up, because Marco Silva now has a system built around him. Marco Silva now has a system which is utilizing Mitrovic properly and will convert that into the same sort of style of play in the Premier League. And we saw it in match day one against the co-favorites, right? The co-favorites to win the league. Mitrovic picked up where he left off in the championship, picked up where he left off with Serbia. And he is the reason Serbia qualified for the World Cup, by the way. They didn't qualify for the Euros. He gets hot. Not only do they qualify for the World Cup, they beat Portugal in their group, and they all qualify automatically. So he's a striker in form. He's a player in form. He's got a team geared to his strengths. Team performance of the weekend for me, Fulham. And look out. Mitrovic is a top 10 striker in the world right now, in my opinion.
One of the matches that disappointed, but I'm not surprised in many ways, was Everton against Chelsea. These are two teams that are not, they have problems. I think Everton in terms of injuries and confidence and lack of depth. And then Chelsea with a squad that on paper looks like it'd be world beaters, but in reality it is a mess.
Yeah. I guess people follow me on Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, you've seen all my commentary about Tuchel for the last 6 months. Yesterday was nothing different. I mean, look, this is an Everton team that can barely field an 11. Alex Iwobi, who has never played central midfield in his life, and you would never think of as a central midfielder, is forced to play in central midfield. And he has a pretty good game because Chelsea is so tentative. They're so... they get a goal and they sit on. Well, even the goal they got, right, was on a penalty and was probably fortunate. They're a mess. They have 34, by my count right now, Chris, Chelsea have 34 guys who you would consider Premier League first teamers, even though a bunch of those guys weren't given squad numbers, guys like Ross Barkley. I mean, they still have guys like Hudson-Odoi, Ziyech, Werner, guys not making the bench even. So I don't know why they need all these players. They look a mess, and the more players you sign, the more disruptive it is for the dressing room. So, top to bottom, maybe on the planet, they have the most talent, but there's something wrong at that club. In terms of Everton, I think that they played as well as they could given the circumstances. And as I said, as I've teased earlier, Lampard's got a couple moves he's looking to make this week that I'm sure maybe by the time listeners listen to this, they'll know about those. So I think Everton will get better in the next week or two. But again, signing guys in the and then dealing with injuries, signing guys and then having all the injuries Everton's had. I'm not saying they're going to soar up the table, but the Everton you saw yesterday won't be the same Everton you see in a couple of weeks.
Leicester City again, Kartik, having a lead and then ended up drawing a game. This is against Brentford on Sunday morning. It's par for the course, it seems, with Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, and they were so dominant in the first half, and that's the match I've just watched, actually, right before we record. And Chris, I think that there's some sort of mental issue right now with Leicester. There are a lot of players who their transfer rumors around. There are other players that are hitting kind of the end of the line in terms of their age. So I think you have these two things going on. You've got veteran players like the Vardys and the Albrightons and now obviously and Johnny Evans, and obviously Schmeichel has moved on. You have those guys kind of at the end of the line. You also have a bunch of players in their prime who are in their prime sellable place in Telemans, Madison, Barnes, and Fofana, and Ndidi. So I think it's a really bad situation. And to see them go two goals up, Dewsbury Hall had a nice goal. He's a player I'm very high on. But Brentford to fight back. Look, Brentford, they're gonna have a hard time this season. But this match reminded me how good Norgaard is in that central midfield role, that number six role for them. If they get the Damsgaard transfer, which is heavily linked with him, coming from Sampdoria, if they get him over the line, I think they might be okay. And Ivan Toney again, what a brilliant game from him! That's the key for Brentford, right? They got it. They've got to fend off Newcastle and make sure he doesn't want away in the next couple of weeks.
Overall, I think with NBC Sports, going back to what we were saying earlier, I think in many ways I'm not expecting many changes. I'm not expecting anything much different. I'm expecting it to be much of the same, which is good. It's decent, and it's the type of analysis that will satisfy most people. Hardcore fans probably not so much, but still enough to make it decent. But one big difference from this past weekend was the lead commentator, and for the first time in several months, I didn't find myself trying to find a remote to try to find a different commentator, because of it was a joy and a breath of fresh air not to have it be stats driven or filled with stats. So welcome aboard Peter Drury on NBC's broadcast.
And also Chris mm-hmm. real quickly on Drury, it was so refreshing to have him talk about sort of the historical moments in English football from a personal perspective in a way that Arlo White, who I think grew up as kind of a multi-sports fan, didn't feel, right, or didn't articulate as well. So I should have jotted down the moments, but it happened multiple times. Drew recalled three matches this weekend, one match each day, and it happened in each of the three matches. And I'm like, whoa, that's something as a lover of English football and the history and tradition of English football, I can really appreciate him sharing with the American audience. Happened in each of the broadcasts. So a huge upgrade for NBC Sports. I mean, as much as we're criticizing them on other things, you have to give them so much credit for bringing in arguably the best voice to call English football in the English language on the planet.
Yeah, I think honestly, I think they listened. I mean, I think they heard the criticism, and they, I mean, understood in terms of Arlo really kind of ran his course, I think, for the most part. This past weekend, I didn't see too many people saying, like, hey, where's Arlo? I don't think he was missed, to be honest with you. And I think Peter Drury is a huge upgrade. But one example that I thought Peter did a great job too was on, I think, on Sunday. And it might have been the West Ham United Man City game. Yes, it was. It was that game. And there was a brief pause in the game, I think, because of an injury. And Peter Drury started asking Graham Lasso and Lee Dixon about crosses, whether as defenders, if they preferred a kind of an in-swinger or an out-swinger in terms of, actually, on the attack, which one was preferable, and kind of the strengths and weaknesses of both. And those are the types of things, too, that it's game-specific. It's something that is not condescending. It is something that Lee Dixon and Graham Lasso, two fantastic defenders from their time, could share their expertise and knowledge on that. So I thought that was well done. The some of the other games too, Kartik, Bournemouth got a great start, Aston Villa. I think these are two teams that are going to have probably a lot of hot and cold streaks throughout the season. And Bournemouth now face some really tough matches against some of these big four clubs in the next few weeks. Aston Villa still a work in progress, and I think a lot of it depends too on this transfer window. But Other than that match, I'm trying to think what else we haven't covered yet.
I have to ask you about Kiefer Moore. Before you move on from that match, Welsh International, great game, leading the line for Bournemouth. And I have a lot of concerns about Aston Villa. We can get into that another time, just in general, their transfer policy and how the team is shaping up. But a lot of them confirmed on Saturday. But I wanted your thoughts on Moore, because I did not know that he would hit the ground running like this in the Premier League. It wasn't just the goal. He was fantastic in that match as a focal point.
Yeah, I think in many ways, I mean, he is, to me, I mean, he's had experience playing in the Euros. I mean, Wales have been playing in some really difficult games in terms of World Cup qualifiers. And every time he comes on the pitch, he always comes through. I mean, he's the type of player that's very committed, not scared of going in for a tackle, not scared of going in for a header. Doesn't always score, but is a threat. And I think he is a player that really deserves to be in the Premier League. And I think in many ways, previously at Cardiff in the Championship, he should have been in the Premier League. And I think this will be a great season for him too. Hopefully he'll get lots of chances. I know Bournemouth still are going through a period where in this transfer window, where they're planning on bringing a whole bunch of more players in. So there's always that question mark about in terms of how much playing time he'll get. But if I'm a defender and I see Keith Moore coming up against me, I'm worried. In some of these other matches, Kartik, what about the Nottingham Forest Newcastle match? And I saw the highlights. I saw some great goals by Newcastle. Callum Wilson, an incredible goal, probably goal of the weekend for me. But what was the match like itself?
Yeah, Forest looked like they hadn't played together before. I mean, it was very, very, very one way. I think this match, Newcastle, fantastic, right? Joe Ellington, who Eddie Howe inherited as a number nine and has moved to be a number six, really bossed the match in midfield. Almiron looked good. That surprised me. I mean, that's a player, looks like Howe has had an impact on this summer. He had a very, very good match. He's a guy that I had kind of laughed off as someone who would stay in this new Newcastle side. So I was disappointed with Nottingham Forest. I think it's going to take some time for this team to gel with all their new signings. But Newcastle, very impressive in picking up where they left off last season. And a team that I think is really building smartly. I like what they're doing, and I have some deeper thoughts on Newcastle that I'm going to articulate during the course of the week if you follow me on Twitter. But I really like how Eddie Howe is shaping that team up and building slowly and methodically, unlike the impatience we see from some other teams, and even Chelsea buying all these players when they have players in the same position already. I think much more logical what Newcastle's doing, and I guess they've given Howe a long runway, right? I think effectively told him, hey, you've got this job for a couple of years, as long as we see progression.
And then last but not least, Arsenal, who I thought looked fantastic once again. They were a great preseason. They looked wonderful against Crystal Palace. Could have scored a couple more goals. But the part that I actually was most impressed by, other than Arsenal's performance, were the Arsenal fans. I mean, you can tell that they're really excited about this squad, about this team, the way that they're playing. And at Selhurst Park, you saw the Arsenal fans going crazy, rather than some of the Arsenal fans in the past before, too, where kind of arms folded, kind of looking disgruntled at just another transfer window that goes by without signing any key players. This one was great, and I'm so looking forward to watching this Arsenal side this season.
Yeah, I think Arsenal has very few weaknesses. Now the question is, do they have enough experience, and did they have enough guys who can be match winners when things aren't going well for them to really contend? But I think if you look at their squad is about as complete as City and Liverpool, the two title favorites. It's just those guys aren't as experienced, they're not as proven, and they don't have the difference makers. They don't have the Salahs or the De Bruynes or the Nunezes and the Hollands, right? They don't have that level player. But they're the side where I can look at a 1-11 and say, yeah, I don't see a weakness in that team. That's not the case with Chelsea, Spurs, or Man United, the other three big six teams. So I think Arsenal's right there. Arteta's built well. And also on this match, I thought Palace was quite good to watch. They're going to have a good season. They were missing Alisi in this match. Eze doesn't look back up to full speed yet, but they'll get there. And they were a joy to watch after the first, 20 minutes. They didn't look good. But after that, they looked pretty solid.
So we did watch some other soccer too, other than the Premier League, of course, this past weekend. Kartik, I'm just so frustrated with the Bundesliga. I love the Bundesliga. You love the Bundesliga. Everything it stands for. But the way that Bayern Munich just completely dominated Eintracht Frankfurt at Eintracht Frankfurt is not a good look for the league. And within the first 10 minutes, it was 2-0 to Bayern. The game was effectively over after 10 minutes. By halftime, I think it was 5-0. And the final score was 6-1. And to me, it made me personally, it made me less interested in watching the Dortmund game against Bayer Leverkusen on Saturday on ABC, because I'm like, what's the point? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, what was your take? I mean, do you feel the same way?
My take was the same as yours, which was you put it on Twitter, Chris, very, very appropriately. Why does the Bundesliga keep scheduling Bayern in this first match? It's a buzzkill. At least if they played the first weekend on Sunday, we would have a couple of days without this constant reminder of their dominance. So, it was the same thing. I watched pieces of the Gladbach-Hoffenheim match. I want to go back and watch that whole match because Hoffenheim were playing well before they had a guy sent off. But other than that, I didn't watch much Bundesliga this weekend because I kind of was turned off by that first match, honestly.
And that's the thing too about the Bundesliga and about Germany in general, is that they're so stuck in tradition that they don't change. And that's the thing. I mean, Bayern Munich plays in the first game of every year because whoever the winner of the Bundesliga is plays that first game, and Bayern Munich plays that game almost every single year. It's been the same way for years and years. So the very first game sets the stage for, you mean, kind of enthusiasm. And it's such a buzz killer. It's such a downer when it's just, you mean, the team is blown away by Bayern Munich. And to me, I mean, the one thing about the Premier League I would say too is that, at least in terms of how they're marketed and the decisions that they make, are much wiser and also more flexible. Now, to the detriment of the football supporters, the ones that actually have to live with the TV kickoff times, and you mean games being moved to different times of the day, or late at night, or late in the evening when there's not a lot of trains or buses available. But for the global viewer, for the people around the world watching these games, I mean, Crystal Palace against Arsenal was a great way to start off the season. You look at the entire weekend of the Premier League, there weren't any blowouts. Yes, there were. I mean, probably the biggest blowout was Manchester City's dominance against West Ham United. It was, I mean, after that first goal went in, it just seemed inevitable that City would go on and dominate this match. But there weren't any blowouts. So to me, as a viewer, as a neutral, if you're watching the Premier League, you're probably a lot more entertained throughout the entire weekend versus the Bundesliga, where you're just like, from the first game, for the first 10 minutes, you're like, oh, come on, really? This is going to be one of those seasons again?
Yeah, I mean, I watched...
And then, Kartik, I have to say, I'm so looking forward to 2023 and the Apple deal with MLS, because I watched some MLS on Saturday night, and one of the games I watched, it was so boring. It was awful. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, if there was a whip-around show, this would be so much better, because I'd be able to watch action from, I don't know, 8 different games happening at the same time, and I'd see the best moments in live, real time, rather than sticking with the one game that was boring, played in kind of immense, incredible heat in the United States, with just the players' shirts just dripping with sweat. It doesn't make for good football. And you mean, I'm sure MLS Saturday night, there might have been a good game happening, but you mean, when you watch one game, you kind of attach to it. So if I move from that game, which game do I go to? Do I miss something in one of the other matches? So I'm really looking forward to having the whip around show. And I think for MLS, it'll be a much better way to showcase the league.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Kante, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Go ahead.
I watched a little bit of MLS this week, and it was you just don't know which match is going to be good, right? And what's on the line at this time of year. So it was okay. But I agree, a whip around show would be a hit, and I would watch that on Saturday nights.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. So moving on to TV streaming news, and two big stories that came out this week, and you Kartik, are probably better equipped to talk about these. Maybe let's start with the HBO Max one, because basically this week I was busy with a whole bunch of other stories happening, so I haven't been able to follow this one as closely, but I know you have, so you've got the details.
Yeah. So HBO Max is going to be folded into Discovery Plus in a merged streaming platform. Now, I had thought that they would bundle them the way Disney did, because obviously we've talked a lot on this show about the Discovery HBO, the Warner Media Discovery merger, which also was part of the reason we saw CNN Plus pop up for a month and then disappear, right? The Discovery executives decided they were going to fold the CNN Plus content into HBO Max. Now, the HBO Max platform is being folded into Discovery Plus, which will have an impact actually on soccer, with the U.S. rights going to HBO Max, the U.S. men's and women's national team rights, in addition to the fact that, as I remind our listeners often on this show, Chris, Discovery has a history of showing soccer in Europe and a long history of doing it. So I think the combined platform is going to be a bit of a culture shock, because they're two radically different concepts, right? HBO is kind of an arts and entertainment channel with some sports and documentaries, sports documentaries, news documentaries, politics stuff. And Discovery is largely nature, learning, you know, home and garden stuff, right? On their Discovery Plus platform. But you're going to see a merge thing with, I guess, a potpourri of stuff. Not splitting it up the way Disney has with their stuff. Different model. But it'll be a merge platform, presumably with, I would guess, $14.99 a month or more. It might be Netflix range in terms of price.
Yeah, that's the challenge, though, Kartik, because, I have HBO Max. I don't have Discovery Plus, but I have HBO Max, and I watch that maybe a few nights a week. A lot of theatrical movies, a lot of great shows on there. And now merging it with the Discovery, I'm less interested in the Discovery content, and I'm probably not as willing to pay more for the combined effort, because I'm only interested in HBO Max. But then they will be adding U.S. Women's National Team, U.S. Men's National Team, and hopefully U.S. Open Cup to that. So I will want to subscribe, but I don't want a big bloated streaming service with a ton of stuff that I'm not going to watch. But again, I guess in a way, though, too, that's Peacock. Peacock is this big bloated thing with tons of shows and movies and soccer and wrestling. And I just subscribe to the soccer just for the Premier League, and that's it. And any thoughts on a new name? Have they mentioned anything about that, Kartik?
Yeah, I don't know what the new name will be. There's it's supposedly going to have a different name. Is it going to be, people have joked, it's going to be HBO Discovery or Discovery HBO or whatever. But it might have a completely different name, which is memorable, or it could be something that makes us forget what it's associated with. Now, as obvious as I think Peacock's association with NBC is, right, because NBC's had the Peacock as its logo since the 1950s, a lot of people ask, who owns Peacock? What's Peacock associated with? So there is a risk of messing with the brand a little too much.
Now, the thing about streaming, Kartik, I mentioned Peacock and the Premier League, and I mentioned HBO Max and Discovery and the combined effort, which will have U.S. men's national team, and women, and U.S. Open Cup, is oftentimes, so if the Premier League did move from Peacock and it went to someplace else, I would probably cancel my Peacock subscription and go to that new place. That's not going to happen for another 6 years at a minimum. But the other story we want to talk about, too, is CBS and Amazon are the two front runners for the rights to the UEFA Champions League. And this is going to be a six-year deal, potentially $300 million a year. It's going to cost either CBS or Amazon. But say Amazon gets this, Kartik, what happens to Paramount Plus? I mean, is Paramount Plus as strong without the Champions League?
Probably not. I mean, I'm thinking that's their strongest soccer property, but they have other soccer they have so much now. They'll probably still lose some subscribers, but I think they have so much now that a lot of the subscribers that they got initially, because they had the Champions League before they had other men's soccer properties, right? They had NWSL, but actually they didn't have NWSL on Paramount Plus at the time. They had it on CBS, and Twitch had the streaming rights. So I think it was the first property, soccer property, they actually had on what was it called then? CBS
All Access.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think a lot of those people now would hang around for Serie A if they retain that. The Argentine, Brazilian League, CONCACAF stuff, NWSL. At WSL they have now. So it would hurt them, but I don't think it would hurt them as much as it helped them initially, if that makes sense, if the listeners understand what I'm saying.
Well, that's the thing, though, too. If I'm Serie A, I'm hoping that CBS renews the rights to this deal because, if Champions League does go to Amazon, which is quite possible, Amazon's got, shed loads of money to actually, and they want to get into the Amazon, they want to get into the soccer space, and this is a perfect acquisition if they get it, is that with CBS Sports, you'd be left with Serie A, Argentine League, Brazilian League, women's soccer, the Women's Super League, but it's not as prestigious as the Champions League. So hopefully CBS has a good shot at this, but everyone has a price in their mind in terms of how much they're willing to spend. And Viacom has loads of money too, but Amazon, I would imagine, would be the favorite here. But we should find out in the next. Actually, the bidding closes, I believe, a week from now. So in the coming weeks, we should find out whether or not CBS has renewed the rights or if Amazon has gobbled them up and acquired them for 6 years. And those wouldn't be happening until, I think, 2024.
And the new format. And the new format may suit Amazon even better.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to Listener Mailbag. A bunch of feedback here from our listeners. First up is Nick, and he wants to talk about ESPN. And the cross-promotion of different leagues. Nick says, I watched the Community Shield followed by the German Super Cup, both on ESPN+. The Community Shield ended around 30 minutes before the German Super Cup, and ESPN ran the post-game show directly against the start of the Super Cup without anything that I noticed directing viewers towards the German match. It's hard to understand why ESPN wouldn't do bumper programming leading into the start of the second game and then a full post-game afterwards to wrap up both. Bayern was involved after all. It's not like it was two no-name teams. ESPN doesn't have the Premier League, so it's not a huge deal. But it's pretty clear that ESPN has a pecking order.
Yeah. That was actually something I noticed too. I was focused on a championship game at the same time, which was also on ESPN Plus, which was also not being talked about in their kind of wraparound programming. So I did notice that, and this is something clunky. Maybe it's a subject we get into another week about Peacock also changing streams in the middle of game in between games, not having a consistent stream, not knowing where the bumper, what stream the bumper program is going to show up on in each day. So I think just in general, the streaming platforms, I don't know if it's they allocate a certain number amount of time. I don't know how it works. It's not like linear programming where it's, I don't know how the bandwidth is allocated. Maybe they have to change streams at some point, but it would have made sense.
Yeah, two things on that, Kartik. One is that for me personally, so it probably depends on what device you're using, but for me personally, on Peacock this weekend, I started off with Fulham Liverpool, and then once that game was over, I went into a different room, came back, and then it was Spurs against Southampton on the same stream. So that was on a Roku, and I think the same thing happened too, I think on Sunday morning for the Brighton Man United game, and then also the West Ham Man City game, same thing. And this was on Amazon Fire.
It was the same.
Stick.
It was the same stream.
The same stream.
Okay, so yeah. On Apple TV, I had to change. So basically, it went to the walkout of the Man City West Ham match, and then basically the stream cut off, and I had to go find the other stream. And then similarly on Saturday, Fulham Liverpool, same thing, a stream continued, and then I had to cut off and find, well, I went initially to Goal Rush anyway, so I was going to switch streams anyway, but it cut off right before the start of Southampton Spurs.
So Nick's comment's good because there is a pecking order at ESPN, but it changes. I mean, we've noticed this too. I mean, Kartik, you more than anyone in terms of ESPN FC, where there is a pecking order. Sometimes last season it was La Liga. Sometimes a couple of seasons ago it was the Bundesliga. Even previously it would have been Premier League. So depending on the priority, kind of within ESPN, I think the pecking order changes. And then one more thing, though, too, is that with Nick mentioning the lack of promotion, cross-promotion, you know, once a game ends, hey, direct the viewers to go ahead and watch another game that's coming up. The other thing about that particular day when there was a Community Shield and then there was the German Super Cup a little bit later is that there was also an MLS game on, ABC, I think it was. So ESPN has so many properties, so many soccer properties, that if it did cross promotion, you mean you'd have it feel like an infomercial, like probably 5 or 10 minutes talking about all these other games happening. So I mean, ideally you'd like to see the cross promotion or at least let people know. But if the game's big enough or important enough, they'll find it. Next up is talking about USL. Chris says, when it comes to the next USL TV deal, I think they will renew with ESPN with one major condition added to the contract, having games on over-the-air television via ABC. This is important, in my view, for the league to continue to grow, because by being on over-the-air television, it allows USL to attract more fans and make them aware that USL is a major player in the American soccer landscape. Lastly, when it comes to the number of USL games that do air on ABC, I think 6 to 8 games a season is a good number. With Univision being unhappy with MLS in regards to the next TV deal, my question to either of you is, do you see Telemundo taking advantage and getting the MLS rights? So, Kartik, before we go to that, I mean, imagine lower division soccer in the United States. What would happen if, Detroit City was on over-the-air television via ABC?
I guess there'd be a lot of angry MLS people who like the MLS business model or like to defend the MLS business model. Because, again, we have a situation going on in Orange County, California now that has aroused the anger of people who just like to defend MLS's business model. I don't think we'll see USL games on over the air. But then again, I didn't think we would see USL games so prominently on ESPN and ESPN2, and they're there. When I was at the NASL, we got games on over the air in terms of local markets fairly frequently, and usually had to buy time, but still, it's possible. So, that would be interesting if that happened. On the second question, I don't think Univision is going to – they're mad, but I think they want Leagues Cup. So I think that that's going to end up being the determining factor. Yeah, it's an opening for Telemundo. Although Telemundo seems more – they're very much in the NBC mode of big events, you know, big summer tournaments or in this case a winter tournament this year and then Premier League. So maybe, but probably not.
Yeah, Telemundo, it's unfortunate because they're handicapped in a way by NBC Sports on the English language side. And a good example of that is this past weekend in the Premier League. So on an average Premier League weekend, you'd have maybe two or three games on Universo and then usually one or two games on Telemundo. But because almost all the games were on Peacock, then Telemundo and Universo don't show those games in Spanish language on television, on linear television, because they want to try to get as many people to subscribe to Peacock, and they don't want people going to Telemundo watching it for free or going to Universo and watching it in Spanish on cable.
But so, Apple does have, I do believe, the right to to make exceptions or sublicense it, correct, as part of their deal?
Well, this is the Premier League, though. So, but in terms of Premier League, I'm just saying about them being handicapped. Now, as far as MLS goes and Telemundo, so yeah, no, Apple has the Spanish language and English language rights to MLS. Now they could have a simulcast, or they could have games on Spanish language television that Univision might show if they get the rights. I don't think Telemundo would get the rights. I don't think they'd be interested in those rights. It's not as if they have a ton of channels available. Univision has, I mean, so many Univision, Tuduene, Unamas, Galavision, etc. So many channels that they can show games on. Telemundo would not be interested, I believe. You mentioned Leagues Cup, Kartik. If you didn't, that's fine. But did you catch any of the Leagues Cup games last week?
I didn't catch them. No, I caught the highlights the next day. I mean, the crowds were great, but I still didn't understand the point of the showcase games and sort of the hype surrounding them when they were effectively friendlies.
Well, yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's a hype machine. It's a way to go ahead and play some games, generate some ticket revenue, but also start talking about Leagues Cup and getting people excited about it. The interesting thing about this one, I think, to me, watching these games and seeing the fans and seeing, I mean, 70,000 people in a stadium to watch the friendlies and seeing how excited the TV crews were about this, is that this seems to be a win more so for MLS and not so much for Liga MX. And what I mean by this is that this seems to be a way for MLS to really go after the Spanish language audience by having them watch their favorite teams, whether it's Club America or Chivas or whoever it may be, and then hoping that those fans end up becoming MLS fans. And we saw this from the viewing numbers. So the viewing numbers for these games last week, it was a doubleheader. I think Univision had over 1 million viewers. And then the viewership on the English language side, which was on ESPN, I think one of the games was 240,000, and then the other game was like 145,000, roughly. That's just off the top of my head. So the viewing numbers on the English language side, there isn't much interest in these games. On the Spanish language side, through the roof. So I think that's what it is. It's really... I don't see much of a win here for Liga MX other than generating lots more revenue. I don't see Liga MX winning over a lot more new fans, but I do see MLS using this as a way to sell TV rights, generate a lot of revenue, and give that a lot of that to Liga MX, and then hope that MLS gets a whole bunch of new fans who may support Club America and then also support now a new team in MLS, whoever that may be. Moving along, the next up is Anonymous. This talks about something we talked about in recent weeks, and Anonymous says, on the fragmentation of soccer viewers, where there's so many people watching different leagues, different clubs around the United States, I don't think it's a bad thing. Soccer is a very fragmented sport, and that gives the fans a chance to pick what they love. Some, like myself, don't watch women's soccer, but others who love can promote it. That's what makes the sport so great. There isn't one particular soccer. There are many storylines. And that's very true. There's so many storylines. It's hard to, I mean, as a viewer, it's hard to watch everything. Now, if you're an NFL fan on a Sunday, you could probably go ahead and watch most of the games or NFL Red Zone and feel that you've seen all the major highlights. With the, you know, the Premier League alone, I mean, that's an undertaking to watch all those games, Kartik. But there's so many other leagues around the world, and there's only so much time. And that's the thing, that watching a lot of games this weekend, I'm like, I feel sorry for some of these other leagues that are playing at the same time. It's almost impossible for them to compete in the United States.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely true. And it's down to people's personal preferences. I mean, I had another person this weekend tell me that all the focus on the Premier League shows people don't know what they're talking about. The real cultured football fans, the people who know what they're talking about, they're watching Serie A starting next weekend. And I was like, it's up to people's personal preferences, and the market decides. And ultimately, you know, this is a free market thing. The free market has decided the Premier League's the most popular league among English language dominant fans in this country and among fans globally, all fans, all languages. So that's the reality of the situation. If you love Serie A, well, that's great. You know, I encourage you to watch Serie A. You love Liga, you love the Austrian Bundesliga, but there's a reason why there is an emphasis on the Premier League. But it's down to personal preferences. So we have the ability to watch so many different things, and that makes the sport wonderful.
Yeah, one thing that I find interesting too, Kartik, and you may remember this too, is about 10 years ago, there were a lot of MLS journalists who would go out of their way to not watch the Premier League. So you'd see them tweeting on a Saturday or a Sunday. Remember that? And they'd be tweeting about, hey, I'm watching, I don't know, second division German soccer or whatever it may be. I think now they've given up. I think those same journalists are now, you can see them tweeting about the Premier League. I think even that they have given up too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in fairness, there's it's kind of gone both ways. I see more people willing to respect or talk about issues related to MLS of people who didn't care about that league in the past. So
yeah,
we're maturing. And even I think this women's Euros led to a maturity, because there were a lot of women's soccer fans in this country who would only watch the U.S. women or NWSL who finally did watch the Euros and saw, you know, there's something to that. There's something to women's football on the other side of the Atlantic.
So just a few more comments to go from our listeners. Next up is Dave to talk about the MLS Apple deal. Dave says, I agree MLS is taking big risks with Apple, and $250 million per year seems far too low for the risk assumed. Strikes me as a much better deal for Apple than for Major League Soccer. The objections you claim Univision are raising were easily foreseeable. MLS should have discussed and negotiated these with Apple prior to signing and announcing the Apple deal. Mercator says, didn't the MLS open up the bidding to the rights? Didn't they look at all the bids and decide to take Apple? If any of these networks were going to pay big money, they didn't show it when they had the opportunity. Univision paid MLS $15 million a year under the last deal. It's small potatoes compared to what Apple will pay. I actually think it sounds like Don Garber played his cards right, secured the big guaranteed money from Apple, and now can go ask Univision, Fox, and ESPN for money for non-exclusive rights, knowing they need some domestic soccer and want to be seen as an MLS partner. If he was smart, MLS would do shorter TV deals so they can renew right after the 2026 World Cup, which is not aligned with Apple's 10-year deal. Of course, Univision, Fox, and ESPN won't like this because they can't lowball the MLS on a long-term contract like the Pac-10 or ACC. But at the end of the day, they will pay something to put MLS games on TV. Last but not least, Matt has some feedback. He says, hi, guys. I have a number of things I wanted to mention and haven't gotten around to emailing the pod recently. USL's strategy for a better culture has been a huge win. I know USL doesn't have the MLS funding, but the league feels more organic. I 100% agree with you guys on a previous pod. USL also did a great job targeting Caribbean markets for players, a very underrated market for scouting. Second, NBC's panel updates with Peter Drury and Danny Higginbotham are wonderful additions. You get arguably the best English commentator in the world, along with a top English analyst. I will say, I think maybe NBC would have benefited from one or two more changes, but fans like familiarity, so I'm not too bummed and will likely see more in the future. Lastly, I want to give some thoughts on One Team, One Dream. This is Chelsea from DAZN. I felt it was a really good documentary and a huge game changer for the women's game perspective, for not just soccer, but for women's sports as a whole. It does give a similar vibe to the All or Nothing documentaries from Amazon as a heads up, but I think involving the women's game is a huge breakthrough for women's sports. It's all free on YouTube, and it's about 5 hours long. I do think with the fallout of COVID, it did miss some opportunities of how the documentary could have ended. But overall, I was really happy with how the series portrayed some very powerful messages. So yeah, definitely a good recommendation there. I haven't seen that one. So One Team, One Dream. This is Chelsea from DAZN. All right, Kartik, before we head out, any final thoughts?
Yeah, it's just wonderful to have the Premier League back, have the Bundesliga back. Great TV weekend, right? ABC showing that Bundesliga match. One quick thought, we're going to have back to 60% of the Premier League matches this week on NBC or USA. So those people who were complaining to me privately saying, oh, they've gone all in on Peacock this season, it was a one-week thing. I promised some of those people it was because of golf. So next week, six matches between USA and NBC. So check out the listings on World Soccer Talk, as you always do.
Yeah, I was okay with the Peacock because there was even halftime, there was some of the on the Gold Rush halftime, they had the Premier League production studio, some of that content, which usually you don't get that. So I don't know. For me, watching the games on Peacock this weekend felt like I was watching it on television, like just another TV channel. And I guess it helped with so many games available there. All right, listeners, if you do have any questions, feedback for us or anything you'd like to share, go ahead and email us. The email address is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can reach us at Twitter, and that's @worldsoccertalk. Facebook is facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. And of course, you can go to worldsoccertalk.com, the website, and post your comments in the podcast thread there. So everyone, thank you for listening. I hope you have a great week, and we will be back throughout the week with some previews and then looking ahead to another fun weekend of soccer from around the world. Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.